we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
You know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October 2nd, 2015. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our co-host, Elise Jacobson.
Hello.
Our guest co-host, Farah Nazarali and Kirsten Gulbranson.
Hello.
And our control room operator, Amir Ali.
Hey.
Alyssa and Jackie are away today. Welcome, everyone. Today is World Day for Farmed Animals. So I'm calling today's show the Drone Show. At the Animal Rights Conference this summer, I was fortunate to see a panel of speakers who have been innovating and using drone aircraft technology to uncover animal abuses and environmental devastation that animal abusers and big ag don't want you, the public, to know about. Our first interview will be with one of these innovators, Steve Hindy. We've had him on the show before, and his organization is called SHARK, Showing Animals Kindness and Respect. He largely uses video technology for his work in fighting for the animals, and in this interview today, he will tell us what we need to know about using a drone for undercover investigations, as well as we'll talk about some of the findings of his own investigations, particularly to do with pigeon shoots. And for our second interview, we have filmmaker Mark DeVries on the show. He's been here before as well to speak about his very popular film, Speciesism, the movie, but most recently, he's been working on using drone technology to expose the horrors that happen in factory farms that only an aircraft viewing overhead can see. In December 2014, he created a four-minute video as part of his factory farm drone project. This video went viral, and today he will speak to us about his findings over pig farms in North Carolina and the devastations they cause to animal, human, and environmental health that no one really knows about or has been speaking about, perhaps until this video came out, that has now garnered over 19 million views in the last 9 months. That interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So I don't have too much experience myself with drone technology, really. If I think back, I hadn't really heard of them much until I remember about 2 years ago, there was a story in the news that said that the company Amazon was going to start using drone technology to deliver packages. And I remember seeing a photograph of the dog in the front yard grabbing the drone, and because that's what can happen, right? Like a lot of, and they're starting to test them, I think, but I don't know how that's going to work. But Kirsten, you actually have some experience with drones, so tell us about that. You've flown a drone before, right?
I have. It was definitely a low-end, limited-range drone, one of those inexpensive ones. And so, yeah, I've actually, but probably an overstatement, I think I crashed it more than I flew it. And it's very difficult, a little more difficult than you think initially. It's almost like a video game. And so, but I managed to get it up about 100 feet over the neighbor's backyard and recording everything that was happening because it has a built-in camera. And that was until a big gust of wind came, and pretty much I was climbing up the roof trying to get the drone back after.
So it seems like that technology is quite sensitive, and you would think so.
Yeah, very, yeah. Very, especially the low-end ones, I find. We'll probably learn a lot more about the advanced ones on today's show. But, yeah, very sensitive, limited batteries. You only have so much time. And but the power, like I saw and felt the power of what you can do with this technology, and could just imagine what the more advanced drones can offer.
Well, what are your thoughts, Farah and Elise, about what kind of, I guess, innovations and advances in exposing injustices in the world that this kind of technology may have? Like, we'll be learning a little bit about that today, but any thoughts on that?
I think there's enormous potential. I mean, obviously, like you said, there are ways for drones to infiltrate environments that people may not necessarily be able to infiltrate. So, yeah, it has the potential to expose a lot of abuse, a lot of injustice.
You know, I think back to political history in terms of the Vietnam War, and one thing that the government learned from that war is that people don't like to see blood and guts and dead things. And so, you know, the more that we can have these images shown, I think the more people will be affected, because I think one of the reasons it's easy to eat meat and animal flesh is that people just don't see what's being done to the animals, and they don't see the slaughter.
Out of sight, out of mind. Yeah, for sure.
So speaking of, you know, the impact that it can have in terms of exposing the slaughter and the murder and the killing and suffering of animals, today is World Day for Farmed Animals. It's put on by the World Day for Farmed Animals organization that was founded in 1983.
Farm animal rights movement.
Yeah. And they are dedicated to exposing the suffering and slaughter of the 65 billion animals that are killed every year. That is such a huge number, 65 billion. And I was thinking of how that breaks down, that number. It's like 25 million a day. I mean, 25 million a day, every single day. Needless suffering and killing of sentient beings. So today is a day for us to really think about the impact that our choices make, the impact that our foods make, the impact our consumptive patterns make, and the impact that we have to make a positive contribution to a more compassionate and humane world where animals are not seen as commodities and animals don't suffer.
Yeah, for sure. I know you were speaking about earlier, you passed by the chicken slaughterhouse today. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, on my way here, you know, just in this neighborhood, we have a factory farm here. Mm-hmm. And it's horrible.
Well, it's a slaughterhouse where they're coming from, the factory farms.
Yeah. Right, yes. And it's horrible because you can pass by and you can smell the stench. You know, that comes from...
It's the smell of death.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Yeah. Someone was saying, maybe I read this online, maybe you saw this, Elise, how someone who is doing one of the chicken vigils there, people stand from our community will stand outside the slaughterhouse just to let people know what's going on in there with signs in that, because people don't really know otherwise. They might wonder, why does it smell so bad? But you really can't. It's a very nondescript building. You can't tell what it is, other than seeing the chickens, the trucks actually going, which I've never seen before. I think that happens early in the morning. But someone was giving some feedback to one of the activists there, saying that this woman, her dog never wants to go on that corner. The dog always gets really like frantic and scared.
Really?
And that dog can smell the death and smell the fear. So that's just, I think it's, yeah, we just, speaking of drones as well, right? We just need to get this information into the forefront so that people have access to that. And that's why we're here on the radio show. And
the more people see and the more people know, the better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, thank you for that. And we'll be learning more about, there's an event coming on that's today as well called the Fast for Slaughter, right? Is that now
that's
or later?
Right. That's actually today.
Yeah, but are you going to speak about
that?
I
will speak about that a little bit later.
Okay, so stay tuned for that.
Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM is political.
Co-op Radio is poetry.
Co-op Radio is tango.
Co-op Radio is gay.
Ecology.
Comedy.
Feminism.
Philosophy.
Yoga.
Reggae.
Bicycles.
Trade unions.
Gospel.
Live.
Local.
Asian.
African.
Vancouver Co-op Radio is community.
Your community.
Vancouver Co-op Radio.
CFRO.
100.5 FM.
All different.
All the time.
In the Vancouver Public Library North Plaza, there's the Global March for Elephants and Rhinos. On October 3rd and 4th, over 120 cities worldwide will join in the Global March for Elephants and Rhinos. Last year, over 50,000 people marched all over the world to raise awareness and to demand an end to the poaching crisis that is pushing elephants and rhinos rapidly towards extinction. The poaching of these animals has reached unprecedented heights in recent years as the demand for ivory and rhino horn has soared in China and other mainly Asian markets. The ivory trade is also fueling terrorist groups, transnational criminal gangs, and armed militias. militias that are destabilizing African countries, as well as posing serious threats to international security. The Vancouver Walk, again, is October 3rd, 2015, from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. to raise awareness and funds for these beautiful sentient beings. Please visit their website to donate, and for more information, that's www.marchforelephantsandrhinos.org. Again, that's www.marchforelephantsandrhinos.org.
And today is a fast for slaughter that is being put on by the World Day for Farmed Animals. It's a day for us to really take the time to contemplate the 160 million farmed animals that are sent to the slaughterhouse every day. And on their way to the slaughterhouse, they're denied food and water and are under very difficult conditions that create a lot of suffering and often death. And so people around the world, in the tradition of Cesar Chavez and Martin Luther King Jr. and Mahatma Gandhi, who often went on fasts as an act of truth.
It's his birthday today.
Gandhi, that's right. Mm-hmm. And thousands of people around the world are coming together in solidarity with the animals and trying to raise awareness about the suffering and the death.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a little mention of that. So if you want to fast against slaughter, well, it's probably a little bit too late for that now because it's noon right now. But this is something that my sister actually did last year. It was the first year that Farm Animal Rights Movement put on this global event. And I'm just proud of my sister, Liana, if you're listening to this. I think she's doing it again this year as well. So it's fasting in solidarity for the animals that often go for over 12 hours on transport on the way to the slaughterhouse without having any food to eat.
And the hashtag, if you want to check it out on social media, is Fast for Slaughter.
Then on Tuesday and Wednesday, October 6th and 7th, there's the Thanksgiving Turkey Leafleting with Liberation BC. Please join us as we hand out information to shoppers before Thanksgiving. We will be asking people to leave turkeys and all other animals off their plates. Again, this is happening on two separate days, 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. each day. The location on October 6th is City Center Station, which is in downtown Vancouver at Granville in Georgia. And the location on October 7th is Commercial and Broadway SkyTrain Station. If you have an animal-related event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. For our first interview today, we have Steve Hindy on the show. As the founder of Showing Animals Respect and Kindness, or SHARK for short, Steve's organization, based in the U.S., has been documenting and exposing pigeon shoots, rodeos, hunting, bullfights, government deer kills, and other forms of animal abuse since 1993. Steve's number one tool is video footage using hidden video, long-range video, and even video cameras that see in the dark. SHARK's latest innovation to help the animals is by use of drones that they call their angels. These remote-controlled aircrafts are equipped with video cameras to document and expose the animal cruelty that would otherwise be hidden from the public. He is here today to speak to us about his use of drone technology. Hello, Steve, and welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. And thank you for coming on the show today, Steve, to speak to us about drones and how you're using them for the animals. I'd like to start very basic here first. For those of our listeners who may not be familiar at all with what drone technology is, can you start by explaining to us what is a drone and how old or new is this technology?
Well, the technology has been around for a while. We started flying back in 2010. And, we were flying machines made in, well, the parts were made in Germany. We assembled them ourselves. But, so the technology has been around for a while, and they show incredible promise. And, you know, that's just the drones that we use. I mean, unmanned aerial vehicles have been used for some time before that. But, you know, it's in the last, 5-6 years where they really become available to people, you know, just your average person.
And I'm just wondering if you could maybe elaborate a bit on what the actual technology consists of. As far as I know, they look sort of like those remote-controlled helicopters that you might fly. Would that be fair to say, or am I completely off base here?
Well, they kind of are helicopters, only, you know, I'm kind of talking specifically to what we use, which are, they kind of look like flying saucers or something like that. They've got eight arms. And each one has a propeller, and so they're called octocopters because they have eight arms. And they're the advantage over a helicopter, your standard helicopter, is that they're extremely stable. They have blades. The pitch on the blades are each blade is the opposite of the one next to it. So there's no torque force as there is with a single blade helicopter, where you have to have a tail rotor to keep it from spinning. The counterintuitive pitch of the props makes them inherently stable. And so what is so effective about what we use is that we have a camera on it, and it goes up there and it hovers in a place. I mean, we can move it around all we want, but it can hover in one place, and it's just a wonderful camera platform because of its stability.
So can you give us a summary of how you've been using the drones and the work you do to expose animal cruelty to the public? How have you been using them?
Well, for instance, in documenting pigeon shoots, way back when I first started on pigeon shoots, so really like a quarter century ago, they happened very openly, like on the side of a road in Pennsylvania. You'd be able to drive up and park and get out, film the pigeon shoot. And we did that. And we, you know, gave the video footage to the media and all this kind of thing. Well, that put a lot of negative pressure on the pigeon shoots because, you know, people were outraged at this kind of just senseless cruelty and utter waste of life. So what we did then, well, what they did is they moved farther off of the roads. We had to get cameras with stronger lenses, and so then what they started doing is hiding behind fences and, you know, trees and stuff like that. So what we started doing then was we bought some devices called high pods. And a high pod can lift a camera up 30 feet into the air. And once we did that, they literally started building screens that were more than 30 feet high. They started holding shoots way up on top of hills, behind big, you know, stands of trees that you couldn't get over. And so what we said, we need to take to the air. One way or the other, we need to get to the air. And along came these octocopters, and we said, that's it. And we started putting those copters up with those cameras on. And, I mean, it's literally, it has shut some shoots down. And the number of people who go to these shoots is way down. And it's been tremendous. We've used them. In one case, somebody had lost their dog in like this forest preserve area. We were using the copter with infrared device to search for the dog, and the dog was found. It wasn't our copter who found him, but the dog was finally found. It was a happy story. And the promise of these aerial vehicles is incredible. In animal protection and in many, many, many other, aspects of life. Law enforcement's going to be able to use them. You can imagine in a hostage situation where you can't get close to what's going on because, you know, an officer would get shot or something like that. You could send a drone in to have a look at what's going on. Forest fires, traffic accidents, inspecting power lines. Farmers can use them to check out their fields from the air. You know, all the times that you'd love to have a multi-million-dollar helicopter but just can't afford it, here comes the drone. And there are people, you know, who are trying to limit the use of these drones, limit them a lot. And these are the same people, really, who didn't want to see horseless carriages and kept arguing that the Earth was flat and all this kind of thing. They say, oh, you know, and I find this to be amazing because You know, we just had another mass shooting. 10 people dead, more people injured, more people might die. And yet people are saying, oh, but we can't limit the guns. Then along comes the drones, and people say, oh, they might be misused, so let's ban them. How insane is that? I mean, when you think about it, a car can be misused if it's being driven by a drunk. A bat can be misused in the hands of a gangbanger, and yet we don't want to ban them. Well, let me tell you who really wants to ban these drones, the National Rifle Association. Not because the members are against drones, but because NRA leaders, like John Sigler, for instance, a former NRA president, or Ted Nugent, they are pigeon shooters. They are the very people that I was talking about us going after.
That doesn't surprise me.
Hi, Steve. Elise here. I'm just wondering, how do you see this innovation, using drones to expose cruelty to animals, being able to achieve justice for animals in the long run? I mean, you mentioned that the attendance at these pigeon shoots is down, which is wonderful. And I'm just wondering, do you have other goals that you hope to achieve with this technology?
Well, yes, because, you know, every place that we go with our cameras, we're going to film animal abuse. And the animal abusers don't want to be filmed, and I understand that. You know, they don't want their crimes revealed any more than any other criminal. And so, you know, bringing drones in, whether it's to a rodeo that's trying to knock out cameras, and we're finding a lot of that these days, or to a feedlot, you know, where downers are being allowed to, you know, just suffer for hours or days.
Can you elaborate? Oh, sorry. Can you explain to our listeners what downers are?
A downer in a feedlot or at a slaughterhouse is an animal that is so weak or so sick that they just go down, and they cannot get back up. And there have been a lot of exposés about downer animals being allowed to suffer for long periods of time, and so, you know, there have been a lot of exposés where activists get jobs there or whatever. But when that happens, then, of course, the slaughterhouses or the feedlots, they increase their security, and they get more careful about who they hire. And when that happens, you know, you may not then be able to get in that way. So there are other ways that you can do it, like a drone.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, you were in Oklahoma to film a live pigeon shoot political fundraiser held by Jim Inhofe, who is the United States Senator from Oklahoma. Can you tell us about that and what happened there to your angel?
Yes. Jim Inhofe, the senior U.S. Senator from Oklahoma, very powerful person, very corrupt person, held a live pigeon shoot as part of the fundraiser. And so last year, one of our investigators did infiltrate this slaughter and got video footage with his cell phone camera. It was very damaging to Inhofe. But because Inhofe is so cruel and so corrupt, he did it again this year, only he moved to a place that was much harder to get to, and he was more careful with his security, so we couldn't have an infiltrator there. And so what we did is we sent in a drone. And Jim Inhofe, somebody in his party, shot the drone with a rifle. Now, shotguns were being used to shoot the pigeons, but a rifle was used to shoot the copter because it was 400 feet up in the air. So we've got a lot of video footage from the drone before it was shot. We did manage to retrieve the drone. It came in a crash landing, but we actually have it fixed now, and it's ready to go again. I'm going to hold that drone until next year, and I'm going to put it over Jim Inhofe again, and we're going to film him again, and he's going to learn the hard way that when he screws around with us like that, we just come back stronger.
Well, obviously there's been some pushback from using drones for investigations from political leaders. I understand that Virginia Senator Frank M. Ruff introduced a bill to criminalize the use of remote-controlled aircraft after he read media accounts about one of your drones documenting abuse at a live pigeon shoot. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's sad that somebody like Mr. Ruff, instead of being upset about the live pigeon shoot, is upset about the drones. I think if you look into Mr. Rupp's background into who supports him, you're going to find the National Rifle Association. I think Mr. Rupp is just a minion of the NRA, which is really pitiful. And, you know, like I say, he wants to protect the animal abusers. He wants to limit technology that is going to help this country in many, many ways. I think he's pitiful.
Steve, what advice do you have for people who might want to use drones and expose animal abuses in their communities? You know, how would they get started? Is it a big investment? And what basic information would they need to know?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that there's going to be a lot of time and effort into learning to fly, learning to properly fly a drone.
And when you say a lot of time, you mean like dozens of hours, or does it take days or weeks or months? Or
I think that I trained pretty hard for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
a lot of
you
know, time.
You can get a simulator on your computer,
mm-hmm.
and so because if you don't get a simulator on your computer, you're going to crash. You're going to crash one way or the other. You're going to either crash virtually on your computer, or you're going to crash for real. And that can become very expensive. So what you do is you get a small little toy. I mean, something that it fits in your hand, and you fly it around inside your house. You buy something that doesn't break too easy, and you fly it around your house, and you're going to feel like a kid, but that's okay because you're actually learning how to fly the drone. It's not easy. It's not rocket science, but it's not easy. And it just takes a lot of time and effort to learn how to fly that drone. And then once you've got the basics down pretty good, then you can start moving to a bigger machine and a bigger machine and a bigger machine. Because in order to carry a good quality camcorder, you're going to have to have a machine that can hold a little bit of weight, and it's got to carry enough batteries, too, to keep you up in the air long enough to get the job done. And so I don't want people to think that this is something they can just run out and do. There's one group that's, you know, selling toy drones and telling people they're going to be able to do big things for animals. They're not. It's involved. It will take a significant investment of time and a certain investment of money, too.
Mm-hmm. That's helpful to know.
Yeah, speaking of money, how much do they cost? Because from what I understand, there's the low-end ones, and then there's the very high-end ones that are expensive. But what would the price range be there, especially just for a regular citizen who wants to start off, as you're saying, with just starting off at the beginning?
Yeah, the regular citizen should pay $100 or $200
for
that little toy drone that I was talking about. And those little ones are pretty hardy. You can kind of bounce them off the walls, and you can crash them, and all this kind of thing, and they're still ready to go. And then you would get into a drone that's maybe $1,000, and you would do more practicing, but then you really got to get this down. The drones that we use run around $10,000, and so when you have a crash, it's not you're not going to have a good day on that day you crash that mm-hmm. drone. And so, when some creep like Inhofe shoots a drone, it's a significant event.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad that the police out in Oklahoma are so cowed by this guy that they won't even do anything about it. But our drones, it goes well beyond what we use. If we had more money, we would use more expensive drones because they would be able to carry even better cameras and stay up longer. But it is a serious technology. You also have to be very aware of all the safety issues. You do not want anybody, not you, not your friends, not anybody on the ground, to ever be endangered by one of your drones. And there are people out there that are thinking they can just fly these things around and they're just toys. Well, nothing's a toy if it's falling out of the air, You don't want to get hit by something like that. So we try to be extremely safety conscious. And anybody who's going to do anything on behalf of animals, or even just as a hobby, we're always trying to drill that into folks. You got to be very careful and respectful of what you're doing.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today, Steve, to talk to us about drone technology and how you've been using it to advocate for the animals. It's been really enlightening. To find out more about the work that Shark does, you can find them online at sharkonline.com. www.thefarmtoday.org. Thanks a lot, Steve, and have a great day.
And now for the news. A Victoria man says he's been given an ultimatum by City Hall to remove his pot-bellied pigs from the municipality, as having farm animals as pets is prohibited. Mike Downey has had his kids, that's how he affectionately refers to his pigs, for about 2.5 years in a Victoria West group home where he runs a daycare focusing on special needs children. In a lengthy Facebook post, Downey described how he had paid about $2,000 to have the pigs okayed by the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, but ended up being told by Victoria City Hall that they were not permitted. Downey said the pigs became an issue after animal control was called one day when one of his pets wandered outside the home's gate, and a neighbor began complaining of the smells emanating from the pet's washroom area. He even relocated the pets at one point before the city told him he could keep them at his home until September 30th. He said to the news outlets, "I'll do whatever it takes in order to keep my pets. I want to stay close to my family, and I want to be able to stay in the same house to look after the people I look after, not be forced out because I have a pet that people like to eat," end quote. Victoria's Animal Control Branch referred questions to its Director of Legislative and Regulatory Services, who did not respond by press time. Anna Pippis, Director of Farmed Animal Advocacy with Animal Justice, said she was contacted by Downey to help persuade the city to change its mind. Anna Pippis said, "I don't think the city's hands are tied. I think the goal of their legislation is to prevent people from turning the city into a farm. But pot-bellied pigs are not normally raised for food. They're strictly considered pet animals. You can go to Whole Foods or certain grocery stores and get rabbit meat, but you can also go to a shelter and adopt a rabbit. It's the same for pot-bellied pigs," end quote.
What do you think about that?
Well, it just goes to show you how inconsistent it is, our view of like some animals as pet and others as food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Why love one but eat the other?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. On another front, good news is that one of Canada's largest chicken producers has launched an investigation into the animal rights violations at their own slaughtering facility, and that's a year after they were found guilty of failing to provide humane treatment for thousands of chickens. And this was footage that was obtained by Mercy for Animals. The only thing that isn't very optimistic about this, although it's really positive to see, you know, companies that are engaged in killing and causing suffering publicly admit to inhumane practices, they're launching their own investigation, which is unlikely to really, unlikely to result in something very significant. And the industry standards are just so low that it's very unlikely that real change is going to happen.
Absolutely.
But the positive thing is that, you know, the kind of footage that they released that got them the guilty verdict is exactly the kind of potential that it has when animal rights groups are able to get footage and get exposure, and totally fits into what we were talking about in terms of the potential of using drone technology to create more exposure of suffering and slaughter.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
For our second interview today, we have Mark DeVries on the show. You may best know Mark as being the filmmaker of the documentary Speciesism, the movie, released in 2013. But since 2012, he has been secretly using spy drones to investigate and expose the environmental devastation caused by factory farms. In a video investigation that was released last December for public viewing, the drones captured shocking aerial video footage of several massive facilities that supply pigs for Smithfield Foods in the U.S. Today he is here to speak about his discoveries and usage of drone technology to expose what he calls the most bizarre and disturbing environmental phenomena that have been kept hidden from the public. Hello, Mark, and welcome back to the Animal Voices radio show.
Thank you for having me on.
So you've been using drone technology now since 2012, which was around the time you were making the film Speciesism. What got you interested in exploring the use of drones?
Well, I realized that factory farms, of course, do everything they can to keep their operations hidden from the public. In fact, they rely on that. Because, of course, if people really understand what happens on factory farms, both from an environmental perspective and then, of course, what happens on the insides of the facilities to the animals living inside the factories, people would be very seriously concerned and start asking questions, as, of course, they are more and more now. So I realized you can't see a factory farm, the environmental damage, from the outside, because they plant huge numbers of trees, fast-growing, thick trees all around the facilities. I've seen them often dig ditches, steep ditches that you can't basically climb into and back out of very easily, and surround their facilities with barbed wire fences. So I tried, when I was making speciesism, to use airplanes to fly overhead. And that certainly got footage that indicated what was going on in terms of the environmental conditions on these facilities and their environmental impacts. But you can only do so much from thousands of feet away in an airplane. So by flying a drone overhead, I was able to see close up in a new way the size and scale of these facilities in terms of, as I'll discuss, these giant open-air cesspools and these buildings containing thousands upon thousands of animals crammed into factory conditions.
Well, today is October 2nd, World Farmed Animals Day, which ties in perfectly with the topic of your investigation, which took place at a pig factory farm in North Carolina. But before we get into the findings of the investigation, I'm hoping you can tell us a bit about what a pig factory farm specifically consists of, including the scale and the way the pigs are housed and treated.
The factory pig farms throughout North America often contain thousands upon thousands, sometimes tens of thousands, of pigs crammed into essentially factories. These are not farms anymore. Thousands and thousands of pigs are on these facilities. They spend their lives standing on concrete floors, and the waste falls through these slats in the concrete floors and is flushed into giant open-air cesspools. Many of these are the size of multiple football fields. These open-air cesspools are environmentally detrimental, of course, and make the neighbors' lives miserable. They're ruining lives all over North America because people literally have giant open-air pits of raw sewage the size of many acres right near their homes and their backyards. And what makes it worse is that in order to lower the levels of these cesspools, the manure is actually sprayed up into the air where it turns into a mist, and the wind sometimes, in fact, often carries it to neighboring communities, including literally settling on and inside of people's homes.
How many pig factory farms are there in the U.S. or North America?
There are, for example, in just the area that I filmed, there in eastern North Carolina, there are over 2,000, or in North Carolina, concentrated in eastern North Carolina. Eastern North Carolina, specifically Duplin County, is the highest concentration, but there are tens and tens of thousands more spread throughout the country, though not, and throughout North America, though not as concentrated as in some of these specific areas, like in North Carolina.
So what prompted you to fly your drone over this specific factory for pigs over North Carolina? And can you tell us about what kind of video footage the drone captured?
I actually, in the drone video that you see at factoryfarmdrones.com, the video itself shows six different factory farms. It's six completely different facilities. They look similar, not surprisingly, because they're all designed in similar ways with this giant open-air cesspool and these long buildings. But I decided specifically to film in North Carolina because when I was filming my first documentary that I was on the show previously discussing, I visited Eastern North Carolina and I spoke with some of the neighbors who had been affected in that very area. So I met some of these people, and for example, in Speciesism, I spoke with an elderly man who was literally on his deathbed. He was dying of cancer in his home. And he spoke about how he used to own this farm where he had crops and so on. And this giant pig facility with this giant cesspool moved in right next door, built their facility, and ruined his and his family's lives to the point where he sometimes would open his door and step outside into his own front yard and fall down because he could not breathe because there was a several acre open pit of raw sewage just down the way. And the wind just happened to be blowing that way, or they happened to be flushing the contents, the waste, into the lagoon at that particular time. They never knew when it was going to strike. And it just eats away at all of these people emotionally, psychologically, living next to a place like that that they can't do anything about. Because, of course, these are placed in poor areas where people don't have political power. And these companies do have political power, like Smithfield Foods, and the property value goes down in these areas. So people can't move out. They can't sell their house and move out because now their house isn't worth anything and they can't buy property anywhere else. So they're literally stuck. They're trapped there. That's their home, and that's where they're now being forced to live, and in this man's case, spend the rest of his life, including his dying days. And I realized this is such a poignant example, more broadly, of the destructive impacts of the meat industry, of factory farming, and an example of how the industry works. So I decided to use this new technology to get new kinds of footage of it, to get it more into the public sphere of discussion.
So these cesspools, or lagoons as they're often called as well, they're huge. Can you describe the scale of what you were able to see with your drone?
So I was even surprised, having looked at these same facilities with satellite maps and having flown over them with airplanes, when I first reviewed the footage of the first drone flying over the trees and then the trees giving way to this giant pinkish-reddish lake, I was truly stunned. And this is something I'd seen with the satellite images and I had seen from thousands and thousands of feet away. But the scale is simply astonishing. If you imagine a pond that most people have seen, regular sized ponds that people swim in and that have a beach and people take a boat in, for example, and so forth. And you imagine instead of a pond, it's filled with toxic raw sewage and dug there and dumped with this sewage right next to people's homes. That's the scale we're speaking about. We're speaking about multiple football fields full of waste, that is acres. And the most shocking aspect of it, not just in terms of the scale of these facilities and how it affects people's lives, but then because there are so many millions of gallons of waste inside of these cesspools, in order to get rid of it, to lower the levels of the lagoons, they have what are essentially giant garden sprayers. Like the same kinds of sprinklers that people put out on their lawn, that but many times larger and many times more powerful, pumping into a fine mist huge numbers of gallons of the contents of these cesspools high up into the air. And that's one thing I actually was able to get without the drone, that I was able to put together with the drone footage. You need the drone to see the cesspools to understand what you're looking at when you're looking at this spraying. But some of the spraying takes place right on the sides of the roads. So if you look at the video, it's on factoryfarmdrones.com, you can see just off of the side of the roads, we were driving by and we saw this spraying. And we knew, because we had done these drone investigations, that this was from these farms that we were just filming with the drone. So we stopped and pulled out the camera and filmed this. And literally, I had to point the camera up because it was being sprayed so high. And it was making the entire, it was saturating the ground. There was mud running through the grass in these areas. So the scale of these giant manure sprayers is, I think, at least as shocking and disturbing and telling about the factory farming industry, the meat industry in general, as these giant cesspools are.
Well, I want to know, what were your intentions in exposing these findings as a filmmaker, a documentarian, and perhaps just as a citizen who wants the truth to be told?
I really was, from the very beginning when I was filming speciesism, just struck by this particular situation. Because it's very strange to me, actually, that it hasn't in the past gotten as much attention in the media in general, and oftentimes just in the discussion of factory farming, even among people who are discussing the issue of factory farming and who are anti-factory farming advocates, for example. It just sort of had slipped through the cracks for a long time. And I think part of that is because the local impacts of these facilities, and of course they're local for each facility, but they're all over North America, thousands and thousands and thousands of them, so they affect huge numbers of people, but the impacts of these are the impacts are of what people still perceive of as being farms and not factories. So if instead of being pig farms, these were chemical plants and everything else were the same, and someone said a chemical plant was putting a giant lake, many acres of toxic chemical waste, into the ground and then spraying it high up into the air to get rid of it and allow it to soak into the soil, and it was spraying on and near people's homes, it would be a national outrage in the United States and in Canada, and I think in practically any country where this were widely reported. I mean, it would just be something that would, I think, erupt among the public if these were chemical plants. But they are. They're factories, and this is toxic waste. And it is getting people seriously ill. There are increases in asthma symptoms, spikes in people's blood pressure, reduced immune system functioning, serious consequences. And the fact that this is perceived of as farm manure rather than toxic waste from a factory simply has not allowed it to, historically, it seems, gain ground in the public discussion. It's hard for people to really understand what's going on because we're still, even those of us sometimes who are anti-factory farming advocates, we're still partially stuck on the idea that these are farms rather than truly factories.
Well, you released this video investigation online and on YouTube 9 months ago, and since then it's received over 4 million views on YouTube. I'm very curious to know what the response has been like for you, both from the public and from the animal agriculture industry.
Yeah, it really reached a lot more people than I anticipated. It reached over 4 million people on YouTube, and I think it's up to about 15 million on Facebook. So it really has gotten around on social media and has received a significant amount of press from the standard media, traditional media, and that really exceeded my expectations. And I think it's a testament to how, when this is exposed in the right way, when we can really show what's going on, as is the case when you can fly low overhead with a drone like this, rather than being very far away, as they would want us to be, people do realize that something is seriously wrong. And the reaction has really been incredible in terms of the number of people who say that it really affected them and got them thinking about changing their diets. And it also helped persuade a lot of people to become interested in watching the first full-length documentary, Speciesism, the movie, which is one of the important uses for the drone video, I think, in terms of that Speciesism, the movie has been very useful in persuading people about the broader issues of animal rights and the impacts of factory farming.
So this short film that we've been talking about, it's called Spy Drones Expose Smithfield Foods Factory Farms. It's actually just the first in a series for what you are calling the Citizen Drone Project. Please tell us, what is the Citizen Drone Project?
Well, because this took off so much more than I anticipated, I decided to make it the first part of a larger project for using drones to expose environmental issues, both related to factory farming and other significant environmental issues around North America and perhaps the world, because I think this indicates that drones really have an impact in terms of allowing people to understand the scope of what they simply can't, we can't fully comprehend just from a description alone, or from, in the case of various environmental issues, from satellite images and airplanes and so forth. I think drones really are on the cutting edge of being able to obtain footage that can't be obtained elsewhere, but also just to show people what's happening in a new way, in terms of, for example, flying horizontally over a facility allows us to understand conceptually the scale of it and, for example, how close it is to people's homes and so forth. So I'll be doing drone filming and helping other people do drone filming and providing the footage to organizations and to media and so forth.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today, Mark, to tell us about your factory farm drone project. For more information about this project and to see the investigative drone video itself, please visit factoryfarmdrones.com. Thanks, Mark, and have a good day.
Thanks very much for having me on.
So that was our drone show. Hope you enjoyed it. And Kirsten and I were just talking about how we're going to put some resources on our website at animalvoices.org. We'll do that by tomorrow on how to get started with drones?
Yeah, it's a complicated space. Yeah. And so as Steve Hindy mentioned, you know, and as I experienced, drones are really difficult, requiring a lot of practice and some baby steps. So we're going to help people get started. We'll list some drone simulators for your PC and look at some manufacturers that make the most sense and where to get a starting one, because there's definitely things to look out for.
Yeah, so check out our website tomorrow on Saturday, animalvoices.org, and that'll be the show for October the 2nd.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on CFRO 100.5, Vancouver Cooperative Radio, broadcasting live on unceded Coast Salish territories and streaming online at coopradio.org. Join us next week, where Alyssa Novare will be your guide, and we'll be taking a look at the Living with Wildlife Conference presented by Furbearer Defenders that takes place on October the 16th. We always love connecting with our listeners, so if you want to get in touch, you can do so via Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, via Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver, or even email us directly at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. You can also find a collection of our past shows at animalvoices.org. We're also looking to expand our roster, so if you think you can contribute somehow, please do get in touch. We will be closing the show with I'll Fly Away With You, Remix by DJ Krznik. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith, and please remember to be kind to the animals.